You're listening to a podcast made the Johnsonville way.
Welcome to another episode of Off the Clock, a podcast made the Johnsonville way. I am your host, Krista Brazzo, and to my left I have...
Joe Horsemeyer.
And our guests today, actually we're the guests
We today. Are the guests today. This
we,
is pretty awesome.
We are at the beautiful homestead of Mark Polensky. Say hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark, and welcome. We're really glad to have you guys here.
This is awesome. Yes.
We got a nice tour of this beautiful property he has with his family. We're so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having us. But why don't we start with your Johnsonville story? Why don't you tell us how long have you been with Johnsonville, what you do?
I have been with Johnsonville for 12 years. I support the HR payroll system, which is SAP, and I support member services and payroll and the checks. I'm responsible to get the paychecks out on time and all the money to get to the vendors.
You are a big deal.
Yeah.
You already have
kind
a lot of fans.
If you're unhappy with your checks, it's my fault. I did something wrong.
Well, you're a big help to me as a timekeeper. I rely on Mark a lot on payroll Monday when something's not going right. Mark, can you look at this? So
have you been doing this then your whole 12 years?
Yeah, I've been here for 12 years doing that, and then 3 or 4 years at other companies before I came to Johnsonville.
Okay.
So
right.
Supported
well,
the same
see,
thing.
See, Krista, that ain't so bad then, because Krista says that she doesn't have much of a Johnsonville story.
I don't. I'm just a timekeeper. That's all I do.
Oh, it's not just a timekeeper. No. You do affects... hundreds of people.
Yeah, that's true.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. Thanks for helping
well,
us
and in
out
my
here.
New role, I'll probably work with you even
very
more
closely.
Potentially.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, boy.
She'll be able to yell at me a lot more.
He's working on a project right now that's going to make my job a lot easier.
That's true. The onboarding.
So, go figure.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Is that like the big deal right now?
Is that
is
the big
project?
Deal for us right now. It's the onboarding. So when new members come on, we're going to take all of their information that they enter into
success factors,
which is how they apply for the position, and extract that data and put it right into the system. So there's no double keying of information, which everybody probably rolls their eyes and says, why is that a big deal? But if you think of all the hundreds of people we bring in every year, just a few miss keys and we have money going to the wrong places, mm-hmm. we have wrong amounts being paid, all sorts of problems. So this is going to be fantastic.
Well, it's a huge time savings for our department as well, because that's all manual entry right now, and it'll just be kind of like the click of a few buttons and that will all be into SAP. So
that's exactly right.
It's going to make my life
say,
a lot easier.
Yeah, like coming from production and the CI world-ish, I mean, double handling, that is a big no-no. So this sounds exactly like where we want to be going.
I'm hoping so. We're going to go live here in a couple weeks, and either we'll still be friends or I'll be on her. I won't be on her Christmas list anymore.
No, we'll still be friends.
Good.
I'll be relying on you probably quite a bit in my new role, so got to keep those lines of communication open.
Yeah, that's right. So, and now you know where I live, so I need to be really nice. Get everything, make sure you're happy.
We're in a lot of meetings together.
Yeah.
So we started talking one day. I think we have a lot of idle time when we're waiting for people to show up or whatever. And we started talking about your farm. And I think that's how my interest grew in having you on the show, was because I think you said you should come out next year and just check it out when we're getting everything started so you can see how it goes. And I was like, kept that in the back of my head. And then when we started this podcast, I was like, he would be a great interview because this is amazing.
Oh,
so,
well, thank you.
I feel like this is a good segue into what we came
There's
here to talk about.
There's so much going on here. I mean, I'm just looking at, you have one of your kids here at the table with us, and he's mowing down on some raspberries.
Right.
I have eaten all of, there is literally a wasp that is landing here with a grasshopper in its grasp.
This is a lie.
Wow.
No joke. But
like
anyways, I've eaten my breakfast this morning from your farm here. So
yeah, it's fantastic. We walk out, we can eat fresh asparagus, raspberries, strawberries. There's all sorts of berries that are growing right now. In addition to when it comes time to make a salad for dinner, we just go out, we grab all the different kinds of greens we have, the peas, and just a number of fresh things that are ready right now, let alone what we're still producing over the next couple of months. So
yeah,
it's fantastic. It's like our own shopping center,
yeah,
you know, that we've grown. It's all organic, so we can just eat it fresh. We know what's in it. Uh-huh. And it's not going to harm us in any way.
So let's break it down then. So take us back to the history. You know, what got you on the path of having your own organic farm?
It began in the womb.
Well, you're from Alaska, right?
I am from Alaska.
Okay.
And so self-reliance was really important. We, you know, an earthquake might disrupt something, and you might go without power for weeks at a time. So everyone had to have the wood stove, and, you know, you had to have supplies set aside for stuff like that. And that's just kind of always stuck with me, remembering being in the basement around the wood stove. It's 20 or 30 below outside, and there's no power anywhere on the street, you know. And the few people who didn't have that would come over, and,
wow,
and you helped each other out.
What town were you?
Alaska, Palmer, which is outside of Anchorage.
Okay,
about
you know where
minutes.
Girdwood is?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I have family that lives up in
do
Girdwood.
Do you really? It's beautiful up there. Have you been there?
Yeah, I have.
It's awesome, huh?
It's phenomenal.
My entire family is up there. I have 5 siblings and my mom still live up there. So.
That's great.
Yeah.
Cool. Sorry, carry on.
No, it's a good place to be from. Uh-huh. And that just kind of stuck with me. My grandma grew up during the Great Depression, and I'd visit her into her 90s. She passed away a few years ago, but even into her 90s, she was gardening, and we'd sit down for a dinner, and half of the meal would come from her farm.
Wow.
And that always impressed me, and I wanted that. And then when I became a parent, it became more important what I was putting on, the food that we were putting on the plates in front of our kids. Mm-hmm. Where did it come from? What chemicals are in it? And it just segued into, I want to do this. I don't waste time watching TV or...
Why would you want to be inside when this is your view?
Summer,
I mean, this is amazing.
Wisconsin is cold and dark in the winter.
Yeah.
When it comes time for spring, summer, fall, we are outside all the time.
Oh, sure.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a good place to raise kids. They run around. You know, we have 4 acres here, and, you know, it's shady. It's just a beautiful place to be. The kids are running. They're outside. They're active. They all have farm chores they have to do. They have to help with the animals every day, or they have to help weed or whatever. And it's a good way to raise kids. And I think it's a good way to raise a country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea that food doesn't come from the grocery store. It comes from
farms. Yeah.
And let the kids see where it comes from and then help participate in the growing and the raising of the food.
Sure. So. Sure. That's awesome. So you have, did you start out with the amount of acreage that you have now? And you know, how many acres do you have now?
Yeah. We went from a third of an acre where we did a couple fruit trees and a small garden to this. And when we moved here, the first thing we got was a milk cow.
Okay.
And I learned how to milk a cow from YouTube videos. And I realized that.
What a beautiful time.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Raising, getting 5 gallons a day from a milk cow by hand was a real wake-up call to the reality of how easy we have it in America.
Right. Sure. You can just walk into a store and open a door, and there you've got your gallon
of milk.
You've
got your cold gallon of
pasteurized,
milk, cream, and you have butter, and it's a piece of cake, and it's really cheap. In America, in the history of mankind, nobody has enjoyed the food surplus that we enjoy as the average American.
Well, and that's a good point, because how much is a gallon of milk in Alaska?
It's a lot more. It's probably double what we pay down here.
I've heard that stuff like that is...
Everything gets shipped
in. Outrageously expensive because they don't have it locally, right?
That's right. And the good thing is we can get all sorts of food shipped here from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
We eat so well here in America.
Absolutely.
Whatever you want.
We're
is
so
available.
Wasteful, too.
We're wasteful. And what's interesting is every single calorie that we eat represents 10 calories of energy to get the food raised and to your store and then to your home.
Wow.
So it's a wasteful way to do it. Versus if you grow it in your own yard, your own backyard, it's almost a one-to-one, you know, where the input isn't very much and then you can enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and I've read too that kids who grow their own vegetables are much more adventurous with what they'll try too. You know, a lot of kids are so picky when it comes to eating vegetables, but kids who actually take part in harvesting it and growing it are much more willing to eat it.
My kids disprove that theory, but I have a couple picky eaters. But but you're right. They do. They help plant it, and then they're much more likely to try it because they grew it. They like the carrots. The stuff's so fresh. That's the other thing. The downside of getting food from all over the world is they have to pick it early in the growing process because it ships for a number of days to get to America and then be processed and sent to whatever store, and then we pick it up. So it's not the peak ripeness. Where here, we pick it when it's ready. It's as nutrient dense as it's going to be, and it's as tasty. Mm-hmm. So anybody that gardens can appreciate the fact that the food tastes better.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
That's phenomenal. So, like, as we were walking around your farm here, the kids were literally just handing me berries.
Right.
And all these,
like, no, this. Stop. Okay.
It was awesome. So, and also, when we say farm, I don't want people out there to think of the cornrows and a barn and all these things. Can you explain how you have your structure laid out?
I would call this like a homestead, sort
it's
of.
A homestead or a hobby farm. That's right. We have a pool shed that stores enough hay for two cows for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have an orchard, and that has about 20 fruit trees, and we have grapes on it and all sorts of perennials and annuals that we plant out there. And we have a woodlot where we can collect quite a bit of fallen wood for the wood stove. And then we have a large garden spot with fencing. And we have 12 garden beds that are 4x8. And that's about half of the main garden. We have berry bushes throughout the property. And
chickens.
Grape. Yeah, we have chickens.
Yeah.
We've had multiple milk cows. We've raised pigs and ducks and guinea hens.
Yep. And you have a steer here right now?
We have one steer here, and then we have the other ones in the freezer. They get a good life for 2 or 3 years, and then they fill our freezer. And
sure.
Usually we get so much food, we wind up giving it away to friends and family as well. So it's like the animal doesn't just help our family, plus a lot of people, hopefully.
Yeah.
So
That's awesome. Phenomenal. I mean, there's so many things to ask.
So you grow a lot from heirloom seeds. And for people who don't know what an heirloom seed is, can you explain that?
Oh, sure. An heirloom seed will produce itself over and over again, exactly like the mother plant or the parent plant, where most of the food that we get is genetically modified to produce as large of produce as possible because it makes more money.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a certain color or a certain size. But generally, it comes at the expense of really good taste. And so if you grow heirloom, they're the seeds that our grandparents were planting, that their grandparents were planting, and you just retain the seeds and dry them out and save them for the next year, and you can plant them. You don't have to pay for seeds every year.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a good way just to keep them going and then to share the seeds with other people. Every year, we hand out hundreds of strawberry plants and raspberry plants and whatever else we have that people want and just kind of share it around with neighborhoods. I think, you know, we talked about earlier about building families and building, it builds community too.
Yeah.
Gardening and sharing it with people.
A good example of an heirloom product is a tomato. I think a lot of people have at least seen an heirloom tomato, and they're kind of funky looking. You know, they're sort of misshapen and they can be all different, like purpley colors and yellow and red. I think they're beautiful.
Right.
But that's an example of something that hasn't been modified to be a specific shape and a specific color.
Yeah.
And those are some of the most flavorful tomatoes.
They're delicious.
Yeah.
Not to switch gears here, but this is totally bringing me back to our episode with Jamie Schmelzer. And the gargantuan pumpkin that he's
oh really
he's
yeah
growing. Oh yeah, it's definitely not.
You'll have to listen. It's our it's he's our first
not organic
guest,
at all.
And you would never want to eat this thing.
Oh yeah,
or it's anything coming full, from
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. As big as
trying to make it as big as possible. So.
Enter it in the fair kind of a thing.
Yeah, well, actually, he you'll have to listen to the episode, but he'd like to enter it in Cedarburg. They do a competition where they try and swim this thing.
And he has to crawl inside of it and paddle it down a river in a race.
No joke. It's a real deal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't see you doing that with any of your produce.
No, I'm not
going to
do that with my food, but that
sounds
really fun.
I mentioned that we were going to be interviewing you about all your organic produce.
And he was like, yeah, don't.
No.
What was this guy's name and address? Yeah. We want to go and...
he said they actually have to carve this thing with a chainsaw. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
But to bring it back to what you were saying, you know, it's interesting that you're coming from Alaska and you're coming to Wisconsin, which is known as, you know, just this vibrant farming community. And you're basically picking up where my ancestors left off. I grew up on a farm. I probably spent 10 years in all on a farm, and I did farmhand things. You know, it's definitely not organic or to the style that you are, but it was a traditional farm. We milked.
Yeah.
You know, you planted in the spring and then you harvested in the fall and
hard work, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. But for you guys, you don't have any equipment. You're literally using your hands.
So we get 100 cubic yards of wood chips every year or every other year. And we just move that by wheelbarrow and shovel. It just by back, by sweat.
Yeah.
Everything here is just sweat equity. We don't use any kind of machinery.
Yeah,
that's
it's
awesome.
All done. And that way we don't compact the soil. That's the important part about organic gardening is the soil. You want to improve the soil. And if you pack it down with equipment, it forces the water out, and it makes the soil just less likely to produce without amendments on top.
Yep.
And so I just decided no equipment at all. We'll just do it with wheelbarrows and with our backs. And the results right now, it's early. It's still the middle of July.
Yep.
In a month, this place just becomes a jungle. Everything just gets overgrown, and there's just food everywhere. I mean, it really does become amazing. It's unbelievable what Mother Nature will produce if we just allow her to. And the other part about where we live in Wisconsin, or in the world, is we get more moisture in the spring and summer. We're kind of the opposite of most of America. If you look at most of America, they get the rain at the wrong time, which is in the winter.
Yep.
We don't need to water very much here. Sure. I mean, we get spring rains and we get summer storms that come through that pretty much take care of the watering. Outside of every now and then in the garden, it might get a little bit dry and we'll water a little bit. But most of the farms around here don't need the well pumping, you know, and the heavy equipment to spread the water out. It's fantastic. We're so lucky to live here where nature just takes care of itself. We put it in the ground and the sun and the rain come, and it's going to produce.
So can you talk a little bit about your system that you have for collecting water here?
Oh, sure. So I don't like the idea of using groundwater, which is stored up over millions of years,
right.
just to spread on top of the soil. So when we do need a water, we've set up our barn with a gutter system that leads to a cistern, and that cistern can hold about 1,200 gallons of water. And then we can just use that on the plants as needed. But to be honest, it really just kind of becomes a goldfish tank.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We almost never need it out there because the wood chips retain the water so well that I might use it once a year. It just doesn't need to be used. So to talk about the wood chips, I spread the wood chips out and they break down over time and just become fantastic new soil. And we can pretty much just plant into that. And there's no weeding. There's no very little watering, honestly, maybe once a year watering. And so when I get that 100 cubic yards, if you can imagine, that's a 52-foot semi, you know, 8 feet tall, 10 feet wide, whatever it is, just full of wood chips, and they dump it off, and it's this massive pile, you know, nearly the size of the length of my barn, just massive.
Yeah.
And I spend 6 hours spreading that on the orchard, and then I'm done.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like... We weed for hours every week. We don't need to, and we don't have to water. So that effort up front just reduces a lot of effort throughout the gardening season.
So when is the perfect time? I mean, I'm sure you guys, maybe you do. I don't know. Do you go off of actual months? Like, okay, we're going to start now. Or is it literally once Mother Nature makes a turn, is there a certain point when you know, okay, it's time to start?
So I'm really green at this whole thing. Again, I learned how to milk a cow by watching YouTube.
I consider myself green. You're another level.
We don't buy any of the store-bought plants. We start them all from seeds. And so we have to start those up to 12 weeks before the planting season.
Okay.
So my wife has kept a chart of when we've planted stuff.
Wow.
And then we just work back from that every year. And so we know when to start the seeds. And we'll have just layers of seedlings in our house growing. Yeah. Come the end of April, we start putting stuff in the ground, and in May, we just go crazy with it. So it's not like we wait for Mother Nature to turn. We pretty much go off the...
What you've done in the past.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have to wait for like the first frost and all?
You
want to
wait for the last frost.
Or
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For certain things. Other things don't mind frost.
Okay.
For example, the peas, you want to start those as soon as you can work the soil.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And they don't mind if they get frosted on. They're incredible plants. In fact, they'll get snowed on. We have pictures of them being snowed on, and then we were eating those this morning. You know, they don't mind.
They were delicious.
Yeah.
They were delicious. So
speaking of pictures, we've been taking pictures all morning. So I'd love to see some progress pictures after things have kind of overgrown,
really fun,
like you said.
Yeah.
So that'd be cool.
It becomes a jungle. I mean, my son's volunteering to take photos. A lot of the plants just become bigger than them. I mean, they'll walk through, they can disappear.
We
play hide and seek, and it's impossible to find the kids.
This is awesome, though. I mean, I have to say, because, again, I grew up on a farm for X amount of years, and those are some of the best years. Because you just, I mean, after the chores are done, you just go and run.
You have fun,
and you just, you know, you're dirty when you come home, and it's
great. And it's okay.
Yeah,
it's like the dirt. we have so many problems in America today because kids don't get dirty anymore.
I know,
we're not
right?
outside getting exercise. We're not, the kids aren't drinking dirty pond water. They're not swimming. You know, I honestly think that if every child could have the chance to live on a hobby farm similar to this, I think that we'd respect the world more and each other, where our food comes from. But I think people would be healthier and just have healthier lifestyle. My kids run nonstop as soon as the snow's gone until, you know, late fall. My kids are just outside all the time. It's fantastic.
And that's how I grew up too. I grew up in the country, and I remember our parents would have to like, okay, it is time to come in the house now.
Exactly.
And today it seems like people have to force their kids out the door, like put down the device, turn the TV off and go outside.
I know. I think and we're losing something.
How can we stretch this out so we don't have to go in yet? Like that's what we did.
Oh man, we used to push the buttons, you know, like just,
you hear someone's mom calling you. It's such a great way to grow up.
Yeah, the kids have swings. They have animals to play with. They have.
I enjoyed one of the swings.
Yeah, you did.
I took a video of that, so we'll post that on the blog. We're gonna have a blog for this, so you'll be able to see evidence of what Joe's talking about.
I'm excited. Yeah. This is great. So, you're very generous with what you have here. I can tell just by the way you're talking, and obviously I've eaten quite a bit this morning already. Do you guys go to farmers markets and things like that?
You know, we do try to support. We believe in the whole local food movement and the idea that help the farmers produce nearby.
Yep.
And but the truth is we produce so much food that we really don't need to. I mean, we grow, if we want it, we grow it. So we really almost don't need to go to farmers markets. We don't have a greenhouse yet, which is something that we'll be adding soon. So we don't produce some things as early as other people, but we encourage everyone to support versus going to the grocery store and just buying whatever is there. Support local farmers markets. And
do you bring any of your product to
that's
a farmer's
what my
market?
Question was
no
too.
When we have extra through our church and just friends that we have, we know people that don't have this opportunity and maybe struggle financially, and so we give excess just away.
If that's great.
The one thing we do sell is eggs. We produce 15 eggs, our chickens produce about 15 eggs a day.
So thank, you for that clarification, Mark.
And then, so the kids will sell those.
Amazing here.
So we sell the eggs, and otherwise we just give the food away. So.
Wow,
that's awesome. So sounds like the bulk of the work is at the front end.
It is,
and at the back end though, because now you've got all this stuff that
harvesting,
you've got to preserve,
cleaning, canning.
Yeah, canning pickling. Is hard work.
It is. You know, we.
It doesn't sound hard. It's exhausting.
We can hundreds of cans of food every fall. And last fall, we were doing the salsa. Everybody had a job. So my oldest is just turned 15, and my youngest just turned 3. So we have that age range. And my wife and I each take a job. Somebody's cutting, and somebody's doing this and that. And everyone had a job, including the 2-year-old who was sitting in the table singing songs to us while everyone else is doing this work. Yeah, because
nice.
It was
that's
an
great.
All-day family event of bringing this produce in. Because when the tomatoes are ready, you got
to
take care of them. They're not
going to
wait. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you got to can it and get it stored and preserved.
Yeah.
And then the other side of that is we enjoy that food all winter long. We're eating the salsa that we made in January, February.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
And it tastes so fresh.
It tastes so good, huh?
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah, we had about 100 jars of salsa.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know my mom, she still to this day, and this goes back from when I was a little kid, strawberries. She will always go to farmers markets or anywhere like that, get a bunch of strawberries and then freeze them. And then all winter long, she's got it on ice cream and she's making all these
smoothies, you make jam with it. It's fantastic, huh?
That's great.
We do all sorts of herbs. Abby makes all of our own bars of soaps, our own sunscreens,
that's
our own.
Awesome.
I got this splinter of all places. I was at the swimming pool and there's this patch of grass, you know, and I stepped on a splinter, got a horrible splinter in my foot, and I'm at the pool, so I don't want to be digging it out in front of everyone. They're like, hey, you must be infectious. So I left it in and it hurt really bad. And my wife makes this tincture. I don't even know what it's called, but you put it on and it draws the splinters out. And it's all with herbs from our farm. Like, she just goes out and picks these things and like cooks these things up. It's amazing. We make bone broth from the bones. We don't try not to waste anything.
Then
we compost all of that. So what I'm saying is we bring in all these variety of things, from our own sunscreen to our own salsa to our own beef, right? And all the waste products get put in the compost pile and turn back into soil, which becomes really nutrient dense, really rich soil that goes and gets spread out and produces the next year's produce. It's a perfect cycle. It's awesome. And it doesn't require a lot of inputs from outside of the farm, minus the wood chips, which we don't produce enough of. Mm-hmm. And it's a cycle that can continue versus very large farms that maybe have to bring all these inputs in and then spray them and spread them and then takes all of the outputs and sends them off the farm. Local, just, it works really well when it's your own backyard.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, that's how it's supposed to work. You know
right.
what I mean?
That's how it started.
That's the way it was worked
for a reason. Whoever, the big guy upstairs made it that way so it could work that way.
That's exactly right.
You know, of course, we've just reached a point in our humanity where we just consume way too much, and that's why we have to bring in all these extra things.
You're right.
But I think it's phenomenal, too. We were walking through, which garden is that over there?
That's the main garden.
The main garden. Yeah. And there are a couple caterpillars on, you know, a couple leaves. But you guys don't spray any of that.
No.
So it's like the moment you see that, oh, we better take that off.
Right.
You know, get rid of that. But it's awesome.
The downside of that is our produce isn't perfect. If you compared the look of our produce against what you could get at the store, you're going to pick what you see in the store.
Sure.
If you go off of taste, 90% of the time you're going to pick what we grow.
Uh-huh.
And if you went off of what was most nutrient dense, if you could take the produce from store-bought, which is picked before its prime, versus what we pick in its ripeness, and you could look at the nutrients, I would bet anything that ours is going to beat it every single time. So regarding that caterpillar, they get picked off. The chickens love them. You know, it's just part of the cycle.
Yeah.
We don't want them destroying our produce, but we produce enough that some of it is going to be eaten by the animals,
sure,
and that's the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing birds peck at our food, you know, they eat a lot of our cherries or a lot of the mulberries or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then their droppings are fertilizing the plants below. So it's, you know, a bit of a trade-off. And we're more than happy to make that. We don't want this to be animal-free or pest-free.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, that's part of what we do. Yeah, we do. We have wasps.
Just, you know, they're sniping grasshoppers left and right. We've got two pairs of grasshoppers on the table in front of us.
That's funny.
When you don't spray to kill, you get the predators that eat the pests that cause the problem.
Right.
When we spray, we kill everything.
Point, you know?
It is, right here in front of us. It's you know, illustrated.
Yeah, so the radio listeners can hear, we have wasps dropping grasshoppers almost to demonstrate my point that nature will take care of itself.
Yeah.
It wouldn't allow something to come through and just wipe.
Yeah.
Except, I mean, there's locusts and stuff that would come through seasonally and destroy stuff. But for the most part, it's a cycle that takes care of itself. If we produce good soil and we don't spray to kill, we get some bad things, and we get a whole lot of good things that help. We have honeybees all over. When we walk through the asparagus, if we care to, after, you'll just hear it humming with life. There's just bees all over. They love
really.
As it becomes a fern-like plant. The bees just love it. We grow buckwheat.
That's what I think is really interesting. Not a lot of people grow grains.
Yeah, we're growing buckwheat, and then we use that as we could harvest that and make pancakes out of it, but we're going to use it as a green manure and shovel it back into the soil. And then we're going to plant winter wheat there. And then next spring, I'll bring in the winter wheat by hand, which will be a bit of a project. But we'll do that. And then we make all our own breads and our own doughs and our own pizza. And in addition to that, with this farming here, we're a no-till farming as well.
Oh.
So we don't actually till anything. We pile stuff on top. And you couldn't do this with conventional farms.
Sure.
You wouldn't have enough energy to do what we do on a
larger
5,000, 10,000 acre farm.
Yeah, yeah.
But on a farm of a couple acres, you can absolutely do that. And it's so good for the soil. We just add nutrients to the top.
Yeah.
They get the worms. There's worms all over. The soil is so rich and soft, pliable. You can just put your hand into it and work it. It's not. When
it doesn't
we moved
need
here,
to be tilled, then.
Yeah,
it doesn't need to be tilled. When we moved here, it's all clay, and it was almost cement.
Yeah.
It was just baked, hard clay. I couldn't put a shovel into it.
Wow.
And now in those areas, you can just reach your hand, and you could dig down at least a foot with, you know, and it's just rich soil.
So how did you learn all of this?
Lots of books.
Yeah.
And YouTube's amazing. I don't know how we
YouTube
live.
YouTube is amazing.
It really is.
20 years ago, 30 years ago, if you wanted to learn something, you needed to know
who
did it or go to the library.
Yeah, or
and
know
the library
a guy.
Is still fantastic, but people are doing what I'm doing online and posting everything about it, videos on how to do it. Again, that's how I learned to milk my cow. I had a Guernsey dropped off, and I'm like, oh boy,
here we go.
Here we go. And luckily I'd done a little bit of prep, but I'd never milked a cow before.
Yeah.
And so that's how I learned to do
it.
One of
my earliest memories is milking. It was a brown cow.
Yeah.
And I just remember that. And, you start at the top and work your way down, and away you go.
You're right. Her name was Robin.
Yeah.
She was a Guernsey. She produced about 5 or 6 gallons a day. And then our last one was another Guernsey Jersey mix, and she'd produce 7 gallons a day. And you think, well, what are you going to do with 7 gallons of milk? And we didn't waste it. My wife made about 15 different products with the milk, everything from butter to ice cream to cream cheese. Yeah, everything. Oh, the mozzarella cheese she made was the best mozzarella cheese I've ever had in my life.
I love fresh mozzarella.
And it's super easy. Mozzarella is super easy to make. But anyway, we'd make all this stuff. And then with the leftover milk, we would feed the pigs, the chickens. We have barn cats. They would get it.
Yeah.
It's really good fertilizer, and and so it's just not wasted. It's not
dumped down the drain.
Just dumped down the drain. And the other thing is, when you grow it, you appreciate it more. In America, we waste a whole lot of food. We eat this, I don't like it, and we throw it away. If you've grown it yourself, you think of the sweat equity that went into it, and the time and effort that went into it, and it seems like we waste a lot less.
I think
for me, that's what I'd worry about, is growing more than I could do with,
Oh, yeah.
What do I do with all that excess? Because I don't want to waste it. But that's where you're giving it to people who can't grow.
We are the people that show up with extra zucchinis that, everyone's like, nah, I don't want zucchini, but well, take it. I can't do anything with it. So
yeah, I get several leftovers from one of my coworkers too. I don't have anything to do with this. You got to take it.
We've frozen tons. We make breads out of it. But the other thing is having animals, our animals, we
feed,
eat all the extra too. And then it cuts down on the feed costs. So
somebody like me who, this is sort of something my husband and I would aspire to do eventually. What would your advice be to somebody who wants to start maybe on a smaller scale? We don't have kids, so it's just the two of us.
Oh, yeah.
But we do. We want to have chickens. We want to have, the vegetables, the fruits.
Get started. My advice would be just get started.
Get started.
Jump
in.
Start with chickens. Chickens are super easy. Don't go with the rooster. The hens are so easy to take care of. You get fresh, nutritious eggs every day from them. Very easy to take care of. Yes, a lot of people live in apartments. Start with something on the patio. Herbs, your favorite herbs.
Yeah.
Put those out there. Herbs grow very easy in
Wisconsin. Yeah, I've got some herbs now. Yeah. So
exactly.
Yeah.
That's how you start. And then you just expand from there. We went crazy with this. My goal is to produce all the food that we'd ever need.
Yeah.
And when we had the milk cow, we could absolutely do that. Most of our meals would come from our farm.
So what's the percentage now of what you have to buy from the store versus what you have
here?
Well,
we still buy a lot because we drink a lot of, every morning we have smoothies.
Oh,
and although we have hundreds of berry bushes, we can consume still, with a family of 4 boys, we can consume more than we're producing yet.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, we make popsicles with it and stuff. And it's all no sugar, just natural sugars and everything. So it's very healthy for the kids. As far as what we produce, it's hard for me to answer that. Some meals we produce 100% on the farm, and some meals are maybe 10%.
Yeah.
But we produce something for every meal.
Yeah.
And again, when you have the milk cow, most of the meals were, if you can consider a steak and potatoes and a side and, the butter on it and the milk you drink.
Yeah.
That's all from the farm.
Sure.
And there's a lot of meals that we eat that are 100% from the farm. So wow.
That's awesome.
How many hours do you think you spend within your season doing this? I mean, is it, on average?
Well, it feels endless in the spring.
Sure.
Now, it's super easy. So in the summer, I spend probably maybe 4 hours a week.
Okay.
Keeping going.
That's great.
Once
it's
established,
size,
it takes care of itself, it sounds like.
When in the spring, I will take time off on Friday.
Okay.
I'll take PTO, and I will work 40 hours over the weekend.
Wow.
I will work from as soon as I get up until I go to bed.
Uh-huh.
And because we're moving wood chips, we're moving the compost piles around, planting, and those things have to happen within a deadline. So it doesn't matter if it's raining or if I'm tired.
Yeah.
You got to get it in when you have to get it in.
Uh-huh.
And that lasts for about 2 or 3 weeks where we're putting in a whole lot of time. And then we're just maintaining right now. We just have to keep the weeds down.
Yep.
And we try to minimize the weeds with wood chips, with the rubber matting that you saw. We move the chickens around, put up fencing around so they'll eat a lot of the weeds and minimize my work that way. And then in the fall, we put a lot of time in gathering the food. In winter, we don't do anything.
Okay.
So just enjoy the fruits of your labor at that point.
That's exactly right. At that point, we've got it all canned and everything. So this is my hobby. This is what I do with my spare time is this. It's a great it's a great place to get exercise, to be outdoor, to enjoy it. I think putting your hand in dirt is good for everybody. Yeah. I think it's just healthy. It's a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah,
I agree.
That's awesome.
So that's my hobby. And that's why sometimes it's a really, really crazy busy. But most of the year, it's a handful of hours is all.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I mean, thank you for, you know, helping the ecosystem in this area in general. But then you obviously get to just
enjoy it too.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's cool. We've improved the soil for whoever takes over this farm when I leave.
Yeah.
Whether it's a family member or we sell it to somebody. Somebody's going to come on improved soil that will help them with whatever they grow, whatever they want to produce. We don't put chemicals into our farm, so nothing bad is going into the water system.
Yep.
This is sustainable. I think that there's a huge movement going on in America right now saying, where does my food come from? What are the inputs? What are the outputs? There's a thing called the Dirty Dozen, which talks about the
I have it on my phone.
Oh, you do?
So I can keep track of that. Yeah.
It shows the dirtiest, chemically the dirtiest foods to consume.
Really?
Asparagus is on the list. All these things that you think are healthy, strawberries are on the list.
They
retain the most amount of pesticides. If you were giving your children strawberries and asparagus, you think, hey, I'm giving them a healthy snack or whatever. What the downside of that is with conventional farming, we're giving them the chemicals the farmer sprayed on it.
Yeah.
And really, we shouldn't be doing that. And so there's a huge demand for organic food and getting away from that. Every time I go shop at a grocery store, whether it's Costco or Piggly Wiggly or Festival or Walmart, wherever, anytime I see a manager, I always tell them we want more organic food. I want them to see the demand. I want them to hear the demand. They'll see the demand as more of us buy it. At Costco, they can't produce enough organic food now that Costco, the company, is buying farmland, turning it into organic farms, and hiring farmers to manage it for them.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. The demand is definitely there. And as we do that, we'll be putting fewer poisons into the ground and into our water, and it'll improve future generations, the food that people eat.
Yeah. Sure.
That's great.
That's amazing.
And here on my farm, like if you care to, the cow, if you went up to the cow, it's going to lick you. You know, my animals are all friendly. They come.
Yeah.
That's the downside of doing this kind of farming that I still struggle with ethically is and morally is I'm raising a steer. Every year we have a steer butchered. This thing, I bottle feed them. I feed them. I take care of them every day. They come up. They will lick me. If I'm near them, they will, you know, nuzzle me and they want my attention.
Do you name them or is that just a bad idea?
I absolutely do name them.
Okay.
I do. And then I send for the butcher to pick them up and send them off, and I get back this incredibly tasty beef.
Sure.
It's a kind of a different mindset versus just going to the store and seeing, hey, this looks good, and not having to think about where it came from.
Right, or how it was treated.
Or how it was treated, that's right.
Well, this has been awesome.
Yeah.
I appreciate you
I'm going to be coming to you for
off.
Advice in a couple of years maybe when, you know, where my husband and I are getting ready to go down this road. So
I'd love to help. And we always have excess strawberry plants. It sounds like Jeff, who's been really quiet through this interview, is really excited to get some of our cherry tomato plants. And
so traditionally, we've been having our guests kind of sign us off. So I wrote a little something down for Mark to read there. So whenever you're ready.
I would love to sign off. This has been a fantastic event. I'm really glad you guys came out.
Yeah,
no, thank you so
here.
Much.
This is Mark Plenski, and you've been listening to Off the Clock, a podcast made the Johnsonville way.
This is Ryan Polinsky, and you've been listening to Off the Clock, a podcast made the Johnsonville way.
Awesome.
Good job.